Good morning. Today's daf in Rosh Hashanah Yud Ches. We are starting on the very top of Yud Ches Amud Aleph. We are a second line down. And Hachanami Biyachid. Sorry, that's the answer. Gzar Dim Biyachid Tanaihi. So we're talking now about our ability or our lack thereof of overturning a Gzar Din of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu was gozer on an individual, on a community. So what can we do to affect change? So Tefillah is the answer. That was clear from yesterday's daf. The question is tefillah and tshuva. The question becomes: is that once the Kadosh Baruch Hu is not only puts a person in a position, but on top of that, also has a gzar din. So after the gzira, so is tshuva going to be effective? Yes or no? And the Gemara's answer is that by an individual, no. In fact, in the Amud Beis of yesterday's daf, Yizayin Amud Beis. So the Amar Rav Yochanan Gedola Tshuva Shemekaris Gzar Din Shal Adam. So Rav Yochanan says that Tshuva is unbelievable. It's Korea Gzar Din. So but meanwhile, the Gemara numerous times points out that only works for its seaboard. It does not work by an individual. It does not work by a yachid. That is the Gemara in yesterday's daf. We move ahead to today's daf, and the Gemara says is that not everyone's on board with that idea. Some are of the position that by a gzar din, even after a gzar din, even a yachid could be korea. He can overturn, he can tear up a gzar din of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So if a gzar din diyachid tanai, the time the Gemara quotes, a braisa. Hiya, Rabbi Meir Omer, shnaim shalalamita. So two people are sick. V'chulyan shaveh. And their illness is exactly the same, identical. V'chein shnaim shalalagardom. Lidon v'dinan shaveh. Two people were caught, Rashi says, doing the same act. And are doing a similar act to one another, and they both got the same din. So zeh yarid v'zeh lo yarid, zeh nitzah v'zeh lo nitzah. And meanwhile, as far as illness, as far as the verdict is concerned, so one suffered and died from his illness, and in the parallel case, so the one person got caught and was actually punished for what he did, and the other one, in both those cases, survived. And the question, and how can people survive? How does that happen? So so one person davened answered, and the other person davened was not answered. And then the obvious follow-up question, so they're both davening, so why did they both get answered? So and so the answer is that it depends on whether or not it's tefillah shlema or it's not a tefillah shlema. What is a tefillah shlema? So it's a great question. I wish I had a great answer. But Rashi does say niskavin. So Rashi says that tefillah shlema means that it was davening with kavana. Rabbi Eliezer Omer kan kodem gzar din kan lachar gzar din. Now that all that was the shita of Reb Meir. So Reb Meir, in a response to a simple question of why do some people have their tefillahs answer and some people do not? So Reb Meir says it's all a function of kavanah in your davening. That's Shita's Reb Meir. Rabbi Eliezer Omer kan kodem gzar din kan lachar gzar din. And Rabbi Eliezer says it depends whether or not we're before or after the gzar din. And Rabbi Yitzchak Omer yafetzak alada main kodem gzar din bein lachar gzar din. And Rabbi Yitzchak says that when it comes to tzaka, when it comes to crying out to Kadosh Baruch Hu, that'll be effective and that'll work both before or after the gzar din. Comes out over here in this braisa. Is that you see that according to the Shita Rabbi Yitzchak, even for an individual, even after the Gzar Din Tefillah is going to work, and meanwhile, the other Tanaim obviously are not of that position. Now, Reb Meir, I don't know. I'm not sure where Reb Meir stands on that. Reb Meir just makes a distinction between a Tefillah Shlema and a Tefillah that is Eina Shlema. So I'm just speaking for myself. I'm on the fence in terms of whether Reb Meir is on board with Rabbi Yitzchak, not on board with Rabbi Yitzchak. I'm unsure about that. But certainly, before Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Lazar, right? That was the third sheet or the second sheet in the Braisa. So Kan Kodem Gzar Din, Kan Lacher Gzar Din. So clearly he's of the position that after Gzar Din, a Yachid cannot do anything to overturn the Gzar Din. Okay, so what comes out now is that in the Braisa, clearly a machlok is between sheetas 2 and 3 in the Braisa, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yitzchak, in terms of whether or not after Gzar Din, a Yachid can go ahead and overturn that Gzar Din. V'gzar din d'tzibor mimikr v'aksiv. So the Gemara says, now is this true regarding gzar din of tzibor? Meaning, in yesterday's daf, it seemed to have been pretty concluded that a tzibor can go ahead and overturn a gzar din. The Gemara says, v'akasav echad omer. So the Gemara says, but I'm not sure about that based on a sequence of psukim in Yirmiyahu. So it's not a sequence of psukim, it's two different psukim, two different prakim, but anyway. One pasuk, kivse marali becha, viksiv in ikim techapsi manesa vitarbila chabariz, nechtam avonech, lifanain. So one pasuk gives the indication that we can go ahead and we can clean and we can expunge. And another pasuk says, no, nechtam avonech lifanai. Still, it's going to be a stain in front of me. So my love, kan konem gzardin, kan lacha gzardin. So the Gemara's assumption over here is whether or not we can clean out the stain. Obviously, over here it's said metaphorically. In other words, but can we go ahead and overturn the gzera of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Well, it depends. If it's before the gzera, so then yes, then you can go ahead and you can be mechabes. You can clean it out. On the other hand, the other pasuk that said that would indicate that there's nothing you could do about it. So that's lacha gzardin.
So how do they feel about tshuva? I don't understand the purpose of tshuva if you can't change
the tzardin. I mean, tshuva still is always going to be efficacious as far as your neshama is concerned. But in terms on just on this earth, okay, add that. Okay, it's. But the question is better than my answer. So the idiv idil acher gzardin. So the Gemara says that no, really the truth of the matter is that it's both are after gzardin. V'lo kasha kam b'gzardin sheishim oshvua. So the Gemara now makes another chiluk within Gzardin, and that is a Gzardin with or without a Shvuah. So a Gzardin with a Shvuah, that can't be overturned. A Gzardin without a Shvuah, that can be overturned. Now, I'll state the obvious. It's not particularly helpful to us if we don't know, right, when the Gzardin is, when it's before, when it's after, and, right, this new wrinkle, that a Gzardin with a Shvuah, how do we know? How do we know that's a gzardin with a shvua? Okay, so questions which I don't have answers for, but obviously, you know, the information is helpful, but only if we are working with knowledge. We don't have the knowledge base of when there is or isn't a gzardin. So the Gemara says, but we've just learned together the gzardin with a shvua, so that is that's unchangeable. So Rav Shmuel bar Ami, Amar Shmuel bar Ami, Amar La Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmini, Amar Rav Yonasan, Minayin l'gzardin sheishimo shvua, that when I have a gzardin coupled with a shvua, She'ino Nikra. So that can't be overturned. Shenamar. So here we turn to Shmuel Aleph. So V'lachen Ishbat LeBeis Eili, Im Yiskaper Avon Beis Eili, B'Zevachu V'Mincha. So here we know about the Shvuah because we're reading about it in the Psukim. Okay, so, and the behavior of Beis Eili, the sons of Eili, inappropriate behavior, the Gemara elsewhere, right? I think the Gemara in Shabbos, Nun Hei, Nun Vav, somewhere thereabouts. But anyway, the behavior, or better stated, right? Typical me, right? I'm citing a Gemara to tell you about a pasuk and Navi. Okay, sorry. I could do better. So I should be able to do better. So the pesukim in Shmuel Aleph talk about the behavior of the sons of Eli. Anyway, without going into detail right now, they misbehaved. Okay, that's just we'll leave it at that. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very unhappy with their behavior, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a shvua, right? Nishbati lebeis Eli. So despite the fact that you could do tshuva and they could daven, but in other words, no, there's a gzar din and there's a shvua as well. Okay, and that can't be overturned. So Amar Rava bezech v'mincha ina miskaper v'a miskaper b'torah. No, so the Gemara says, but there's still something you could do. And so Shitas Rava, now a big discussion over here, Rashi and Tosus both discuss, are we talking about Rava, are we talking about Rabba? Okay, just to be clear, all right, when we're describing the one with the Aleph, it's typically pronounced Rava. I'm not saying it's right, I'm just simply saying that's how it's pronounced. And when we say the one with the Hey, it's Rabba. Okay, that's number one. So who are they? So obviously they're Amoraim. So Rava is the Chavrus of Abaye, right? And throughout Shas, we see the machloks in between Rav and Abaye. So Rabba with a hey, so that was the Rebbe of Abaye, and probably also the foster father of his as well. Meaning Abaye was the Yasam, and he was raised in the house of Rabba. So so who are we talking about over here? Are we talking about Rabba? Are we talking about Rabba? So Rashi and Tosfos both discuss. Now, why is it a discussion? Because we know Eli was a Kohen. So if you descend from Eli, that probably means you're a Kohen. But as Rashi points out over here, not necessarily. In other words, you could be related to Eli on the matrilineal side. So, in other words, you could have
You could be a descendant of Eli, a direct descendant of Eli, but on the mother's side, not on the father's side. And so you don't necessarily have to be a Kohen. Okay. And fine. All right, let's just leave it at that. So anyway, so I'm a Rava Bezerchle Mincha and a Miskaper of a Miskaper B'Torah. Okay, so Rava says that, look, so as far as the Gzar Din coupled together with the Shavuah that was given to all the descendants of Eli, and by the way, the Shavuah is that they're not going to live a long life. Nevertheless, if you are engaged in the study of Torah, obviously get an extension. So Abai Amar Bezevcha V'mincha Inu Miskaper V'Miskaper B'Torah V'Gimilas Chasadim. And Abai says, no, you need a combination. Torah by itself is insufficient. You need Torah and you need Gimilas Chasadim as well. Okay, Rabba V'Abai Mide Beis Eli Kasu. So Rabba and Abai come from Beis Eli. In other words, they're both descendants of Eli. So again, Rashi and Tosfos over here have a discussion in terms of whether we're talking about Rabba or whether we're talking about Rava. Either way, whichever one it is. So they come from the house of Eli, and as a result of that now, unfortunately, right, it's just part of their, I don't mean this literally, but just simply part of their genetic makeup, and that is that they're not going to experience longevity, or they're not decreed to enjoy longevity. Okay, just simply, the unfortunate makeup of being from the house of Eli. Nevertheless, Rabba Dasuk B'Torah Chaya Arban Shnin. So as far as Rabba's concerned, so he was Osik B'Torah, and therefore he lived for 40 years. So in other words, he got an extension. Okay, 40 years is an extension. Okay. And Abai Dasuk B'Torah V'Gmilas Chasadim Chaya Shitzin Shnin. Now, as far as Abai is concerned, not only was he Osik B'Torah, but also Gmilas Chasad as well. So his extension allowed him to live for 60 years. Okay. So Haraya, that despite the fact that there's a Gzar Din, and even with a Shvuah, coupled with a Shvuah, nevertheless, if you're Osik B'Torah, and according to Abai, if you're Osik in Torah, Gemilas Chasadim, so you're going to get extensions. Now, right, it goes without saying that even without a Shvuah, and even without a Gzar Din coupled with a Shvuah, so we need to be Osik B'Torah, and Gemilas Chasadim. So, right, in other words, the default position anyways that we should be learning, and we should be involved in Chesed. So over here, so what do they do different or special? I don't know. But nevertheless, there's still a benefit to helping out in terms of Gzar Din and Shvua. Tana Rabbanan. Mishpacha achas haitza b'Yerushalayim shayu meiseha meisim b'nei yudcha shana. So there was a family in Yerushalayim and Rachmanis, they did not experience longevity. In fact, they would die on average at 18 years of age. So Balva odias Rabbi Yochum and Zakai, so they told Rabbi Yochum and Zakai, Amar lehem, shemem mishpachas eli atam. So his comment is that, look, I don't know your yichus, I don't know your lineage, but I would guess that you come from the family of Eli. So as part of the gzera that was given to Bnei Eli and to all future generations is that they're not going to live, meaning that they're going to die young. So So advice to them is engage in the study of Torah. So devote yourself diligently to learning Torah, and you're going to live. And by Yukarin Osam Mishpachas Rav Yochanan Shmo, his advice was efficacious, and they got an extension of life, and all their children they named after Rav Yochanan. Okay, so he gave them the Eitzah. So as a sign of respect and gratitude, so they named all their children after Rav Yochanan. I was wondering the same thing myself. I don't have a good answer. Okay.
Predominant.
Yeah, right.
But it's also interesting that from Eli until now, which is many hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years. Yeah. More. Right. He was before Bais Rishon. Okay. Good. A thousand years, I'd say about. Amar Shmuel bar Ibar Inya Mishvei Derav Minayin Legzar Din Shel Tzibur Sheino Nechtam. So the Gemara has a little bit more to go to in terms of discussing this particular topic of a Gzar Din. So the Gemara quotes in the Shem of Rav, how do I know that a Gzar Din, by when it comes to Tzibur Sheino Nechtam, so it's not signed. Okay, so although there may be a Gzar Din out there, but it's not going to be ratified. So the Gemara says, Eino Nechtam Vaksiv. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? In other words, we just cited the pasuk earlier in Yirmiyahu, and it is signed. So Ela Afagav Shenechtam Nekra. So the Gemara says, no, that's not what I meant. What I meant was,
is that despite the fact that there's a chasima, it was signed, but nevertheless he could tear it up. Shenemar kashem lokinim b'chol kareinu alav. So we have a pasuk. The pasuk says that we call out to Kadosh Baruch Hu b'loshon rabim, right? In the plural, meaning we're talking about a tzibur over here, and Kadosh Baruch Hu is available anytime that we call out to him. Oh, so you see that despite the fact that there's a gzar din and there's a chasima, but we cry out to him. So then Kadosh Baruch Hu answers, v'aksiv dirsho Hashem b'himatzo. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? So we can call out to Kadosh Baruch Hu when he's available. So the Gemara says, Hasam b'yachid hachab b'tzibur. So the Gemara says, no. When you're talking about b'yachid, so you need auspicious timing. Okay, when is that auspicious timing? Stay tuned. And probably you can already guess when that auspicious time is going to be. So that's when it comes to a yachid. But when it comes to the rabbin, when it comes to a tzibur, so anytime the tzibur gets together, so we're going to have an audience with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Speaking obviously to the significance of davening with a minyan, and that there you don't need an auspicious time. As long as you're together with the tzibur, so then you have a Kadosh Baruch Hu's attention.
Yeah, so, what happened on the Malchus, Hashem says, the decree that you will all die. There were 10 of them.
Right. Okay, good. Yeah. I hear the question. I don't have a good answer. Okay. I'll think about it. So, b'yachid ema. So the Gemara says, okay. So when it comes to a yachid, so you need an auspicious time. So you're good. So you need an auspicious time. When's that time? So Amar Rava Baravu Ailo Asar Yamim Shabin Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim. What we call Aseret Yemei Tshuva. So Aseret Yemei Tshuva is an auspicious time. We have now Kadosh Baruch Hu's complete attention. Again, kaviyachol, meaning Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what's going on. Obviously, this is talking about just the system in which we are now available to make our petitions even stronger to Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's an auspicious time. So, v'yihu k'asara yamin v'yagif Hashem es naval. So, good. So, now on the topic of 10 days, so the Gemara now moves over a little bit later into Shmuel Aleph. We were at the beginning of Shmuel Aleph. Now here, we're towards the end of Shmuel Aleph. So, and naval dies, but only after 10 days. Naval was with David HaMelech. Naval was married to Abigail. Right? David HaMelech ends up marrying Abigail. Anyway, so Yud Yami Mayavidate. So what happened was that Naval got a 10-day extension before he died. So Amrav Yehuda, so the Gemara now wants to know, what is that? So Amrav Yehuda, Amrav Keneged Asar Ligi Moshenasa Naval La'avde David. So okay, so the Gemara says that was Mida Keneged Mida. At one point in time, Naval went ahead and served the servants of David HaMelech, and so as a result of that, he got a 10-day extension. That's one pshat. The Gemara gives a second pshat. Obviously, germane to our discussion. Rav Nachman Amar Rava Baravua. So, Eilu Yud Yamin Shabin Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And these are the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. And so what, these are the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. So the, Rashi writes, Kadosh Baruch Hu is waiting, for Naval to do tshuva. And apparently he did not. That seems to be the simple way to understand the Gemara over here. But those were the 10 days that we were making reference to. Okay. Good. Okay, so a continuation, meaning that's Adkan, that's the first part of today's daf. Not totally. Obviously, we're almost at a Mishnah. Now, what would be our third Mishnah of the Perek, but we're almost there. But meanwhile, just in terms of a quick mid-daf review, so basically the Gemara continued its discussion regarding a Gzardin, whether or not an individual can overturn a Gzardin, whether a Tzibur can overturn a Gzardin with a Shvua, a Gzardin without a Shvua. Okay, so a lot of the basics regarding the system of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in terms of what we can petition, what we can't petition, and obviously it's still, when all said and done, you know, it's difficult for us to fully understand, you know, how exactly the system works and when, you know, and what exactly we can do. But the basic ideas we got, but obviously they're still hard to grasp. And like I said yesterday, all we're given is a small little window into how the system works. And from there, you know, obviously it's difficult. We're finite beings and we're trying to understand something that is much greater than us. So four judgments that we learned in the Mishnah in yesterday's daf. I didn't mean yesterday. So going back to Tetzayin and Aleph, so the Mishnah told us that four times a year the world is going to be judged. On three of those occasions, the resources of the world are going to be judged. And on one day of those years, the people are going to be judged. That's what we call Rosh Hashanah.
So the people are going to be judged. The Mishnah gave an imagery in terms of the people being judged. Right? If you go back to the Mishnah reads, Barash Hashanah Kabaya Olam, over Lefan of Kivnei Marom. So we pass in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu like, now the term of the Mishnah is Bnei Marom. What does that mean? Okay, good. So that's what we want to know, and that's what the Gemara now is going to try to ascertain. And so, my Kivnei Marom. So it's a really simple question. What does the Mishnah mean? What's the definition of the Mishnah when it says Kivnei Marom? So, Hacha Targimu. So here, where's here? Right? Where's the you are here? So that's Bavel, obviously. In other words, here in Bavel, so when we're presented with this Mishnah in the base measure, so the way they would say it is Kivnei Amarna. It's a reference to the sheep. Okay, so in Imra. In Imra in Aramaic is sheep, and the Mishnah is making reference to it. The Mishnah is speaking in Aramaic, so typically no. Typically the Mishnayos are written in Lashon Kodesh, are written in Hebrew, but they spoke in Aramaic over there in Eretz Yisrael. They spoke in Aramaic. Aramaic was a spoken language. Anytime the Mishnah, right? Someone made this observation to me. Anytime the Mishnah, not here, but elsewhere. Anytime the Mishnah cites any kind of contract law, right? The Mishnah is going to be quoting from Iksuva or whatever documents were prevalent at the time. The Mishnayos always flip right to Aramaic. Okay, in other words, that was a spoken language. Okay, good. So so when the Mishnah says Kivnei Maron, so it means Zimra, it means sheep. So and Rashi points out what sheep are we talking about? So we're talking about when the sheep are being counted for the mitzvah of Meiser Behema. So we know that there's a small opening made at the fence, and each sheep now is going to be sent out one by one, so I can count, so I can get to Meiser Behema, can get to the 10th animal. We discussed Meiser Behema at length in the Gemara and Bechoros. Anyway. So that's the visual over here, is that that despite the fact that there are a lot of us, nevertheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts us one by one, like sheep. Reish Lakish Amar Kemalos Beis Maron. Again, over here, they're working on the definition. What is B'nai Maron? So like the steps of B'nai Maron. So we're talking about a cliff. It's narrow. It's extraordinarily narrow. The only way you can walk is on a single pathway. And you can't veer to the right, you can't veer to the left. Either way, you're going to be falling off on the side on either side. And apparently it was a popular area. It's called Maron. Anyway, that's what the Mishnah is describing. It's the same basic idea. In other words, we're counted individually. We're almost like marching in single file. But nevertheless, we're working now on the definition. And then finally, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Kechayelo Shel Beis David. It's like soldiers of Beis David, soldiers of Beis David, meaning that basically as we're in somehow some sort of formation, so that's how Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to be counting us. And obviously, at this point in time, I'm going to go on in the Gemara, but at this point in time, so anyone who's interested in Drush, so obviously there's a lot to darshan out over here in terms of what the which angle you're going to take in terms of how we're judged on Rosh Hashanah, right? Like the sheep, like walking a narrow pathway. Or like soldiers that they now the darshanim are going to get involved over here. I'm not a darshan, so therefore I'm going to go on. I'm a rabbi, Bar Bachanan, Rav Yochanan, v'kula niskarim b'skira achas. So as far as the Kadosh Baruch Hu is able to judge, he does so in one view. Now I'm a Rav Nachman Yitzchak Afanami Tanina. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says correct, meaning, and I'm going to cite the pasuk that our Mishnah cited that the Kadosh Baruch Hu does a b'skira achas. He does it in one view. So my kamar. So the Gemara says pshat in the pasuk that we just cited. So ilim achi kamar de barnu lekule amo miach libayu kada de. So the Gemara says is a pshat that when it says hayotzer yachad libam, right? They're of one heart. Is that talking about us, meaning the people? So the Gemara says no. Vaka chazina de lav hachihu. We're not all the same. Meaning every one of us is different. Kadosh Baruch Hu made us all different. So that's obviously not the pshat. El alav hachikamer. Hayotzer roa yachad libam umevin akol maaseim. The yichud over here is going on to Kadosh Baruch Hu, that Kadosh Baruch Hu, even in judgment, so he has the ability where he can, right, the popular term nowadays, multitask. In other words, he can look at everyone, he can look at everyone simultaneously, and despite the fact that we're all different, and we're all individual, nevertheless, Kadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to look at each one of us and judge us, each one of us individually, even though he's doing it b'skira achas. He's doing it in one view, but nevertheless, obviously, he has the ability to multitask. right? They say that people can multitask. It's not true. The we can't multitask. We can toggle between two activities, but we can't do two things at once. Meanwhile, HaKadosh Baruch Hu too. We can't focus on two things at once. We can only focus on one thing at a time. Okay, anyway. Mishnah. Okay, Adkan. That takes us to the end of the first half of today's daf, the first Amud, and in which we went over the Gzar Din, and we went over Pshat in the Mishnah in terms of what does the Mishnah mean when it says that in Rosh Hashanah we are like Kivnei Marom, three Pshatim in the Gemara, and the Pshat in the Pasuk in Tehillim. Al Shisha Chadashim. Okay, now we move to Rosh Chodesh. Okay, so here, good opportunity to give just a quick Hagdama to Rosh Chodesh. Okay, so Rosh Chodesh is going to be a big part of our Masechta, even though in terms of Dafim, we're halfway through. Just about halfway through the Masechta. But nevertheless, in terms of topic now, we are going to be turning to basically the topic that's going to cover us for the next little bit. And that's going to be the institution of Rosh Chodesh, the establishment of Rosh Chodesh. So it just we're not gonna do the planetary stuff, although that is coming up, right? The sun, the moon, the orbits. So chaf and chaf aleph. Okay, good. So until then, right now I can keep everything even nice and simple. I don't have to get involved in any kind of astronomy for today. But just in terms of the basics, so we know that we operate with a lunar calendar and a lunar cycle. And so what we're going to be doing every month is that we're going to be establishing Rosh Chodesh. When I say we, I mean Beis Din. So Beis Din will set up exactly when Rosh Chodesh is. There are two candidates of when Rosh Chodesh can be. In other words, after the month has started, so from there till the end, so Rosh Chodesh of the following month, of the next month, can be either on day 30 or day 31, which means that day 30 will become day number one of the next month, or day 31 will be the first day of the next month. Otherwise stated, a month is either going to be 29 or 30 days. Okay. Now, Beis Din is going to make the determination in terms of which day is actually going to be Rosh Chodesh. What is that determination going to be based on? So if you're going to be reading the Mishnayos and learning the Gemara here in Rosh Hashanah, which, God willing, we're going to do, so you get the impression that's all based on Eidus. Witnesses are going to come and they're going to testify that they saw the new moon, right? The lunar cycle as such is that the moon goes into a phase where it's totally not within our view. We're not seeing any part of the lit moon. And then at the beginning of the month, we're going to be seeing a sliver of the new moon. Witnesses come and report this sliver of the witness of the sliver of the new moon. All I need are two witnesses to come. We're going to be describing in detail over here the sighting of the new moon, the witnesses coming and testifying that they saw the new moon. And based on that information that's given to them, now based in upon receiving and accepting the testimony of these witnesses, so based in now, will establish which day is Rosh Chodesh. Okay. That's the simplest way to understand it. That's our Mishnayos, that's the Gemara, that's all coming up. Not today. Today we're not focusing on that. Meanwhile, the Beis Din also were fully aware of astronomy and fully aware of the calculations that were necessary. And so they also had what's called cheshbon, meaning the math that was involved in terms of determining that we're going to be establishing Rosh Chodesh based on the numbers. The fact that the moon orbits around the earth on a schedule on average, this is not every month, but on average, 29 days, 12 hours, 793 chalakim of 1 hour, approximately 43 minutes. And they're fully aware of that. And the math is coming up, but again, not for today. And so another part of their determination of which day is Rosh Chodesh is based on those calculations as well. Probably the best way to say it, I don't know if this is absolutely correct, but it's probably the best way to say it, is that Beis Din had a blended approach in which they would take into account the calculations and they would also use the Eidus as well, okay? And exactly which one they favored, again, probably the best way to say it is that it was a blended approach between these two, and that's how Beis Din would determine which day was Rosh Chodesh. But there were 2 days which served as candidates. So that meant that the end of the month, so which day now is going to be Rosh Chodesh? So look, we have a Rosh Chodesh coming up soon enough. When is Rosh Chodesh going to be? So we look at a calendar. Good, because the calendar was fixed. The calendar is fixed now for the last approximately 1,700 years. So we don't have to guess. We know exactly when Rosh Chodesh is coming up. But back in the good old days, so it was all based on when based and decided and determined. Okay, good. So right now in our Mishnah, we're going to be working a little bit backwards, meaning this Mishnah over here is going to be focusing on based and made the determination. How based and arrives at that and the process of the witnesses coming, that comes up later in our Masechta. Right now we're at the point where Beis Din now has made the determination. Okay, now that Beis Din decided which day is Rosh Chodesh, so now dissemination of that information to the population. So what are they going to do? So they're going to post it on their website, and they're going to send text to everybody that this day now is Rosh Chodesh. Good. So nowadays, meaning if we had a Beis Din, and if Rosh Chodesh was determined by Beis Din, that's how it would be done nowadays. Okay, and I'd venture a guess. Seems reasonable what I'm about to say, that if in fact that was the case, then everybody would know when Rosh Chodesh is, and then we wouldn't be operating with any Sfeika Diyuma. Okay, seemingly. However, back in the good old days, so that's not how information was disseminated, but information was disseminated with shluchim, messengers that were sending that information out. Okay, not that long ago here in America, so we had a Revolutionary War. Okay, and Paul Revere. So good. So he sent out message. He was on horseback and he was running through the colonies to inform everybody that the British are coming. Okay. So we don't have to go back that far in history to consider that disseminating information is not as, we live in a different world. So disseminating information takes time. Now there used to be a time actually where they figured it out, meaning they had their own high-speed internet back in the day. And what they used to do is that they used to light fires from one mountaintop to another mountaintop to another mountaintop. And it was a really quick way to send information across thousands. I'm exaggerating. Hundreds of miles. Okay, good. So they actually figured out their high-speed internet. However, nothing's changed in the last 2,000 years. Their internet went down. And we'll talk more about that later in the Masechta as well. So why they stopped using that form of communication? So anyway, so what happened was that the shluchim went on horseback, and they went through the country and outside the country as well. You had Jewish people living not just in Eretz Yisrael but outside Eretz Yisrael, and you had to send out that information. Now, certain months of the year, that information becomes critical. Okay, we happen to be right now in the month of Cheshvan. Okay, so when's Rosh Chodesh? So it's important that we know when Rosh Chodesh is, but for us in the Gullus, is it critical? Not for the month of Cheshvan. I understand it's nice to know on Rosh Chodesh itself, so we could daven, we could say halal, good, but for us, it's not critical information that we know when Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan is. But obviously there are many months of the year where it's critical to know when Rosh Chodesh is, right? You're going into Pesach. I need to know when the first day of Nisan is, so I need to know now. When am I going to be sitting down eating matzah? When am I prohibited from eating chametz? Are there months where it's critical to know? So how many months of the year now does it become critical for the population to know when Rosh Chodesh is? Our Mishnah. Good. So good. So all that brings us right to our Mishnah over here. So let's begin. Al shisha chadashim ashluchim yotzim. So for 6 months of the year, so we're going to be sending our shluchim. Okay. Misconception, which I want to clarify, and I say misconception, I was holding by this misconception for some time, and so let's make this clear right now. Later in the Masechta, we're going to be talking about how you can override the Shabbos, but that's to testify about the new moon. In other words, so when you have the Adam coming to Beis Din to testify about the new moon, so that can involve Chilul Shabbos. But here, we're not on testifying about the new moon. Rosh Chodesh has been established. We're talking about now disseminating that information to the population. That is not going to override the Shabbos. Not going to override the Shabbos. Which means that between Rosh Chodesh Nisan, I'm only giving one example. We could do this for many different months. But from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, to tell the masses now about when Rosh Chodesh was so that they know now which day to observe Pesach. So how many travel days do they actually have? Not that many. Right? They have less than 2 weeks, and you also have to deduct Shabbosim as well. They can't travel on Shabbos. Okay. So, right, 12, 13 days, maybe, to go ahead and travel in order to disseminate that information. Okay, good. So, al shisha chadashim ashluchim yotzim. So, for 6 months, the shluchim go out. Al nisa mibnei ha-pesach. And so now we're going to be talking about the six critical months in which this information is necessary. So, number one, Nisan. Number two, al av mibnei ha-tanis. So, av, because you had to observe Tisha B'Av. Now here, your travel time is significantly diminished. You're talking about 8 days, and again, if there's a Shabbos in those 8 days, which there's going to be, there could be two Shabbos in those 8 days, so that really limits the amount of time that they had to travel. Al elu mibnei Rosh Hashanah. Okay, elu because of Rosh Hashanah. Now Rashi over here explains what's going on. So we need to know which day to observe Rosh Hashanah. Now, Rosh Hashanah is a Rosh Chodesh, so that's tricky. Meaning here you have a Yontif, which I know is it's a Masechta we're learning. Here you have a Yontif which actually is Rosh Chodesh itself. And you don't know which day it's going to be. It could either be the 30th or 31st day of Elul. So what do you do? So what we do is the following. And then this is Rashi's explanation over here. Everything I'm saying right now is Rashi. So what we do is as follows. So we tell the Galus, we tell the diaspora when Elul was. Okay. Now, but still, which day is going to be Rosh Hashanah? It could be day 30, could be day 31. So they're going to be observing day 30 as Rosh Hashanah. Now, from Rashi, it does sound like day 30 and only day 30. But as we know, obviously, that's not the practice. Not only is that not the practice, but in fact, in Eretz Yisrael itself, they observe 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. But what we're doing, however, is that we're conflating different time periods, meaning there was a time period where Rosh Hashanah was observed 1 day. There was a time period when Rosh Hashanah was observed 2 days. So we're going back to a time where Rosh Hashanah was observed for 1 day. And so you tell the Galus when Rosh Chodesh Elul was, and they're going to observe day 30. What do you mean? It's a suffix, meaning we don't know when Rosh Hashanah is. So Rashi points out over here, the majority of years, Elul was a chaser. It was a depleted month, meaning it was only 29 days. So that day 30 becomes the first day of the next month. If I remember correctly, so I think the stats are that from Ezra until the writing of the Gemara, it's hundreds and hundreds of years. So they were not Ma'aber Elul. Okay. Since the vast majority of years, so Elul is a Chaser, so therefore, once everyone knows when Rosh Chodesh Elul is, so they'll observe day 30 as Rosh Hashanah. Okay, now, this transitions us to the next point of the Mishnah, and so once we know when Rosh Hashanah is, so do we need to send Shluchim in Tishrei? And the answer is going to be yes, as will become evident in our Mishnah. Now, why? So the reason why is because despite the fact that we observe Rosh Hashanah on day 30 of Elul, despite that fact, nevertheless, we're going to send our Shluchim again for Tishrei. Why? Because we only observe Rosh Hashanah al pi rov, meaning this is what happens most of the year, so therefore we're going to do it. But we just simply don't have another option. But for Tishrei, if we can clarify, which we can, so we're going to clarify. So we send our Shluchim in order to tell people when Tishrei was. Right, most of the years, it's not going to be a surprise. Most of the years, the information is you observe Rosh Hashanah the right day, and you don't have to adjust. But there may come a year or two where an adjustment needs to be made. And if in fact that's so, they're going to send out shluchim for Yom Kippur and for Sukkos. Al Tishrei may make takaras moados. So for Tishrei, because of the moados, as I just got done explaining. Okay, that was month number four. Now month number five. Al Kislev Mimnei Chanukah Val Adar Mimnei Purim. Okay, so those are the six significant months where it's critical for people to know when exactly Rosh Chodesh is. So of the 12 months of the year, six of those months, so Shluchim were sent out. Ukishaya Beis HaMikdash Chaim Yosef Maf Al Iyar Mimnei Pesach Katan. Now, when there was a Beis HaMikdash, so they would send out Shluchim for the month of Iyar because people need to know when the 14th of Iyar is. Why? Pesach Sheni. V'lifke Nami Atamos Viteve. So the Gemara says, okay, I got a follow-up question, says the Gemara. So we're talking about the critical months because those are months in which we observe something, either a yontif or a fast day. So the Gemara says, how come conspicuously absent from our Mishnah are the months of Tammuz and Teves? Right? You have a fast on both of those months. So why are we not sending out Shluchim? So we seem to be missing two critical months in our Mishnah. So the Gemara goes and answers. We're now on the top of Yud Ches Amud Beis. So the Gemara is going to give an answer. And it's a bit of a long answer. It's not too long an answer. But anyway, we start with the pasuk in Zechariah. Komar Hashem Tzvakot, Soma Revi, Vitzama Chamisha, Vitzama Shvi, Vitzama Asiri, Yeh LaBeis Yehuda, L'Sason U'L'Simcha. So the pasuk in Zechariah is extraordinarily confusing. First of all, there are four fasts a year. The way the fasts are described is as per the month that they fall out on. Meaning it's Som HaRevi, Som HaChamishi, these numbers over here are the numbers of the months. So there's a fast in the fourth month, the fifth month, the seventh month, and the tenth month. Okay. And later this morning, we're going to identify which fast they are. I mean, we all know already, but we'll identify them. Right now, our focus is going to be the way the Navi describes them. They're going to be Sason and Simcha. They're going to be days of joy. Well, that's confusing. They're fast days that are good, that are set aside for joy. What is that? So, Kari Lu Tzom, Kari Lu Sason, V'Simcha. The Gemara asks the obvious question, and the Gemara provides an answer. Bizman Shei Shalom Yiyu Sason and Simcha. So, when there's Shalom, so great. So, Sason and Simcha, and the Ain Shalom Tzom. Now, if there's no Shalom, there's going to be then it's going to be a fast day. So, Amr Papa Hachi Kamar. So, Bizman Shei Shalom. So Rav Papa goes and clarifies even further. He says that if there is shalom, so it's going to be sason simcha, yesh gzeiros hamalchus, if there's governmental decrees, so tzom in, I'm sorry, tzom. So then it's going to be decreed as fast days. And ein gzeiros hamalchus v'ein shalom, so what if we're in some sort of in-between? On one hand, we don't have shalom. Now shalom over here seems to mean autonomy or something akin to that. But there's no shalom, but there's also no gzeres amachas. Okay, so ratzu matanim, ratzu ein matanim. So the Gemara says, so at that point in time, so it's an optional fast day. So, and as Rashi points out over here, this really answers the question. So in other words, the reason why the shulchan are not sent out is because at that kufa of the time of the Mishnah, so these fast days were optional fast days. We're not, obviously, right, just to make points really clear and obvious, we're not talking about Yom Kippur over here. That's not an optional. That's Minat Torah. And as the Gemara is going to clarify, we're also not describing Tisha B'Av as well. So really, we're just limiting ourselves to the fast of Tammuz and the fast in Teves. So the Gemara says, so they are optional. They are no, just another parenthetical note. Nowadays, they're no longer optional, right? Nowadays, we view ourselves as a tkufa of gzeres hamalchus. Okay, but that's its own separate discussion. But anyway, just in terms of staying within the Gemara, and as far as the Gemara's answer is concerned, so now they're optional. Because they're optional, so then we're not going to be toreach. We're not going to overburden the shulchan to have to go out these months on a fast day which is optional. So ihachi Tisha B'Av nami. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, why don't we say the same thing regarding Tisha B'Av? Meaning, isn't Tisha B'Av categorically the same as Asar B'Teves and Yud Zayin B'Tammuz? So the Gemara says it's not. So Amar Rav Papa Shani Tisha B'Av Hol V'Huchbul Abot Saros. Damar Mar Tisha B'Av Charev Bayis HaRishona. I'm sorry. Chayv HaBayis BaRishona Uvashnia V'Nilkada Beitar V'Nechrasha Ha'ir. So you have multiple calamities that befell on Tisha B'Av. Tosfos points out over here, it's true that on Shiva Sar B'Tammuz, we also have multiple calamities, but Tosfos says not comparable, right? The destruction of the first and second base of Mikdash, it's just simply, it's really, unfortunately for us, as a tragedy, it stands on its own level. And so therefore, Tisha B'Av is not even on the table for discussion in terms of it being an option. So, but when it comes to Shiva Sar B'Tammuz and Asar B'Teves, so those are optional. Again, everything I'm saying is within the context and the framework of the Gemara, not in terms of halacha nowadays. Okay. Tanya. We learned on a Braisa. Good. So we just basically went through one Q&A. The question is that our Mishnah describes the critical months in which the shluchim go out. It lists six of them, right? A seventh when there's the Beis HaMikdash for Pesach Sheni. And what about Tammuz? What about Teves? How come our Mishnah doesn't mention them? That's the question. And the answer is because in the tkufa of the Mishnah, so they were not chiyuvim, they were not obligatory fast days, and so therefore we weren't matriach the shlichim. Good. Tanya, we are now about a quarter of the way down on Yud Ches Amud Beis and a Braisa. We quoted the Pasuk in Zechariah. The Pasuk in Zechariah describes that there are four fast days of the year, all commemorating some facet of the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. So over here, we're going to discuss a little bit more about this particular topic. Okay, we're going to be quoting a Braisa. This Braisa is long. This Braisa is going to be covering about half of our Amud. Amr Rabbi Shimon, Arba Dvarim Hayu Rabbi Kiva Darish VeAni Ein Darish Kamoso. So there are four aspects for Rabbi Kiva Darshins, and Rabbi Shimon says, and I'm not in agreement. Rabbi Shimon was a Talmud of Rabbi Kiva. This is presumably Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and he was a student of Rabbi Kiva. And despite the fact that he was a Talmud, but nevertheless, he got to a point in his learning where he could argue, and he does on four occasions. Now, are these only four occasions? Or are these four occasions in Drush? I'm sure. We are right now only going to be covering one of the four. So where can you see the other three? So Rashi gives a Maramakam. You can see Rashi for that. Anyway, but we're focusing on one, obviously relevant to our discussion. Tzom HaRevi'i. So over here, we are now going to be describing the fast days. The Navi describes these fast days. The Navi only gives us the month in which they occur. So Tzom HaRevi'i, so the fast day of the fourth. Now, we're assuming it's the fourth month. Okay, so the fourth month is Tammuz. Remember, Nisan's number one. Okay, we've established that in the beginning of our Masechta. Also, the Torah establishes that for us as well, right? The beginning of the 12th parak of Shmos. Anyway, so Tzom HaRevi'i, that's Tammuz. So what fast day is the Navi describing? So that's what we're going to be discussing right now. So this is all Shitas Rabbi Akiva. So Tzom HaRevi'i, Zutisha B'Tammuz. That's the ninth day of Tammuz, Shabbat Hufka Ir, where the city was breached, Yerushalayim. Shenamar, the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, B'tisha L'chodesh V'yechazek HaRav Ba'ir V'lo Hayah Lahem La'am Ha'aretz V'tivaka Ir. So the Navi in Yirmiyahu goes ahead and describes a breach occurring on the ninth day of Tammuz. Now, at this point in time, hopefully you're a little bit confused. I don't mean to say hopefully, but you should be a little bit confused right now. The ninth day of Tammuz, isn't it the 17th day of Tammuz, right? That's what we observe. So Tosfos over here points out that for the first base of Mikdash, it was the ninth day of Tammuz. The Navi over here in Yirmiyahu is describing the first base of Mikdash. The second base of Mikdash, which also involved the breaching of the walls, so that was the 17th day of Tammuz. We observe the 17th day of Tammuz because our commemoration, our fasting is for the Chorban Bayis Sheni. It's also for the Chorban Bayis Rishon, but we set the date based on the second base of Mikdash, not the first base of Mikdash. Okay, all that has pertosis right here in our daf. So Revi'i. Now, why does the Navi describe it as the fourth? Fourth meaning fourth month, meaning it occurs during Tammuz. Okay, that's number four. Number five. Tzom HaChamishi. So Zutishabav, that's Tishabav. Shabbat Nisra Beis Elokeinu. V'amaykarele Chamishi Chamish L'Chadashim. Okay, and the pasuk in Zechariah describes it as number five because that's the fifth month. Now, Tzom HaShevi'i. So Ze Gimel B'Tishrei. That's the third day of Tishrei. Shabbat Nera Gedaliah Ben Achikam. So Gedaliah Ben Achikam, who was a Jewish governor that was set up by the Babylonians in order to give us some form of autonomy. Granted that following directive of the Babylonians, but nevertheless, it gave us some form of autonomy, but unfortunately, he was murdered. Omi Hargo Yishmael Ben Nesanya Hargo, and the Gemara over here just quickly fills in who killed him. And the death of a tzaddik, so that is tantamount to the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, and a fast day is set up for his for the commemorating his murder. And why is it number seven again? Seventh month. And Tzom HaAsiri, and finally the Tzom HaAsiri mentioned in Zechariah. So Zu Asara Beteves Shebo Samach Melech Bava Al Yerushalayim. So that's when the siege began. The siege began on the 10th month, during the 10th month. It happens to be the 10th day in the 10th month, but let's try to keep this as clear as possible. The number 10 over here, as described in the Pasuk in Zechariah, that's going on the number month that it is in the year, meaning Tevis is the 10th month. It also happens to be the 10th day of the month. Shenema vayidvar Hashem elai b'shana ha-tshiis b'chodesh ha-siri b'esor l'chodesh l'mor ben adam kasav l'cha ha-shem Hayom es etzem hayom azeh samach melabavol el Yerushalayim. Good, and the Gemara quotes the pasuk in Yecheskel, and I'm not going to go through the pasuk right now. But basically, the siege has begun on the 10th day of the 10th month. V'amai kari le'asiri. Now, as far as the pasuk in Zechariah is concerned, why is it called number 10? Asir lechadashim. It's the 10th month. Okay. Now, what comes out over here is that Rabbi Kiva darshing that pasuk in Zechariah, where you have the numbers 4, 5, 7, 10. So, according to Rabbi Kiva, each number represents the month of the four fast days. And even though, and this is a part that Rabbi Shimon's going to object to, even though it's not laid out chronologically, meaning from a historical standpoint, which is number one? The fast of the 10th month, meaning because that's when the siege began. So it's not working chronologically. Rabbi Kiva says, okay, it's not working chronologically, meaning the pasuk over here is just simply listing the months in order, even though the events that they're commemorating
are not given in chronological order, but the months are given in chronological order. And this is where Rabbi Shimon now disagrees. V'alo haya ra'i zeh lichtov rishon, v'lama nichtov kan, kedi lahastir chadash and ketiknan. So, and as far as Rabbi Akiva is concerned, so his defense would be, I know Asar B'Tevis happens earlier historically. I'm fully aware of that. But in terms of the Pasuk and Zechariah, in terms of listing the fast days, so they're not doing it sequentially based on chronology, historical chronology. It's based on just simply how the months come out and which month comes first. That's all. V'ani, now I, this is Rabbi Shimon now, disagreeing with Rabbi Akiva. V'ani eni omer kein, ela. So, Tzom ha'asiri zu chamisha b'Tevis. So he says like this, I disagree. There is a fast in the 10th month, as per the Pasuk in Zechariah, but that fast day, that's on the 5th day of Teves. Well, what's the 5th day of Teves? A totally different historical event. Sheba b'ashmu l'gola shehuchtu ha'ir. That's when information was given to the B'nai Bavel, the city of Yerushalayim was destroyed. Okay, now, right, rather amazing. In that, consider, the first base of Mikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av, on the 9th day of Av. When did the information get to B'nai Bavel? Right, 5 months later. Right, not till the 10th month. Then and only then was the information given. Okay, it's difficult to imagine, but again, it's difficult for Mad to imagine because we live in a different world. But it's difficult to imagine that it took 5 months for that information to get disseminated. Shenemar vayibishtei asar bishtei asar shana basir bechamish lachodesh on the 5th day of the month legal usenu ba elai hapalim Yerushalayim. So there was a refugee who came from Yerushalayim leimor huksa'ir vasu yom shmua ki yom sreifa. Now the yom shmua, the day that we learned this information, so that for us became like the day in which it was destroyed. V'nirin divarai midvarav. And Rabbi Shimon says, and look, this is now how I interpret the Pasuk in Zechariah, which means two things. It means that he disagrees to which day within Tevis we should be observing. According to Rabbi Kiva, it's the 10th day of Tevis. And according to Rabbi Shimon, it's the 5th day of Tevis. And what is it commemorating? According to Rabbi Kiva, it's commemorating the beginning of the siege. And according to Rabbi Shimon, it is not commemorating that at all. But rather, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's commemorating the day that the B'nai Bavel learned about the destruction. Shani Omer al Rishon Rishon val Achron Achron v'hu Omer al Rishon Achron val Achron Rishon. And look, my position seems to be much more reasonable, says Rabbi Shimon, because I'm now working in chronological order, in historical order, and Rabbi Kiva's not. Elishu Omer l'seder chadash v'ani Omer l'seder peronios. Okay, I count as in terms of the peronios. He's counting by chadashim. Okay. I'm going to stop over here. Tomorrow we're going to start with Megillas Tanis. Right, this is a good stopping point for today. And let's quickly recap. The first amud of today's daf. So more about the Gzar Din. And what can change a Gzar Din? And a Gzar Din that's coupled with the Shvua. And what can change that? So the answer is Tefillah, Tshuva, Torah, and Gemilas Chasadim. In that order. Those are the strategies that we could use in order to overturn a Gzar Din. Our Mishnah mentions that in Rosh Hashanah we're like B'nai Maron. What does that mean? Three pshatim that are offered in the Gemara. That was all the Amud Aleph, a quick summary of the Amud Aleph. On the Amud Beis, which really starts on the bottom of the Amud Aleph, so the Shluchim going out after Beis and determine which day was Rosh Chodesh, so then Shluchim would go out in order to disseminate this information. So there were 6 months that became critical that the people need to know this information in terms of when Rosh Chodesh was established. Because there are events in these 6 months. Events which include Yamim Tovim and include also fast days. Conspicuously absent in our Mishnah is the months of Teves and Tammuz, where there are fast days that are recorded in the Navi. So why weren't they mentioned? So the answer of the Gemara is because in the Tekufa of the Mishnah, these fast days were optional. They were not obligatory. And so therefore, they weren't Toreach, they weren't Matriach, the Shluchim to go out. Good. That was the, and just one more point that we covered this morning. And that is that the observance of these fast days. In other words, there are 4 fast days every year in which we commemorate and remind ourselves of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So the Navi and Zechariah just simply describes them as the fast of 4, 5, 7, and 10. And then what we did this morning is that we just simply went through what exactly these months represent. What happened, what occurred in these months. Basic machlok is between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shimon. What these months represent. Actually, mostly agreement, just only one point of disagreement. agreement in terms of what occurred in the 4th, 5th, and 7th month. Disagreement in terms of what occurred in the 10th month and what we're commemorating in the 10th month. Adkan.